Welcome to the CanMed Coffee Talk podcast, where we talk with the leading minds in cannabis science, medicine, cultivation, and safety testing. I am your host, Ben Amaralt. I'm the marketing manager at Medicinal Genomics and proud member of the team who puts on the CanMed conference. A few housekeeping items before we introduce this episode's guest. Check out canmedevents.com for all the latest information about the CanMed 24 Innovation and Investment Summit, happening this May in Marco Island, Florida. CanMed 24 is an all-inclusive event featuring world-class content, four-star accommodations, ample networking opportunities, and meals and drinks included. Be sure to sign up for email alerts at canmedevents.com so you don't miss any announcements leading up to this year's event. If you plan to join us in Florida, I encourage you to buy your tickets now. Space is limited this year and rooms are filling up. And if you can't join us this year, you can still stay connected with the CanMed community by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Just search for CanMed Events. And you can also enjoy free access to all the podcast archive episodes, as well as videos of all the past CanMed presentations in our CanMed video archive at canmedevents.com. Our guest this episode is Megan Bang. Megan is the revolutionary force behind Trusted Canna Nurse. Recognizing the gap between elderly patients and cannabis, Megan sought to provide that demographic with an extra hand-holding and guidance they need to have the best possible experience. With over a decade of nursing experience in diverse fields such as oncology, labor and delivery, and hospice care, she brings a unique perspective to her practice. At CanMed 24, Megan will be participating in the cannabis nursing panel and presenting a poster titled Microdosing Psilocybin for Cannabis Dependency, a Nurse-Led Intervention. During our conversation, we discuss the important role nurses play in cannabis medicine, how brands can tap into the expertise cannabis nurses have, how psilocybin can be used to treat addictive behavior, the results from Trusted Canna Nurse's 6-week beta for using psilocybin to treat cannabis dependency, and more. Before we get to my conversation with Megan, I'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Trusted Canna Nurse. Trusted Canna Nurse was founded by Megan Bang and Ariane Williams, two nurses who are dedicated to bridging the gap between traditional medicine and the world of cannabis and psychedelics. They specialize in creating evidence-based treatment plans for all ages that address chronic illness, treatment-resistant conditions, mental health, autism, and more. Learn more at trustedcannanurse.com. Okay, and without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Megan Bang. Good afternoon, Megan. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk with you today, and we are excited to have you joining us again for CanMed. I know that you've attended CanMed events in the past, and we're lucky to have you presenting at the event this year, both as part of the nursing panel, which is happening on Sunday evening, which is going to explore the role of nurses in cannabis medicine and how brands can use their expertise when developing new products. But you'll also be presenting a poster about a nurse-led intervention that uses microdosing psilocybin for treating cannabis dependency, which I know we're going to get into a little bit later. But first, I wanted to talk with you about the role of nurses in cannabis. So sort of what does that role look like, and how has that changed since you first got involved in cannabis medicine?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Nurses play a really important and pivotal role in cannabinoid medicine. We are essentially like the bridge between patients who are interested in cannabis therapies and the cannabis itself. There are physicians who are informed about it, but it's really like the nurses who are at the bedside having like the important conversations with patients. Like, we are that bridge that can provide the much needed education and guidance that patients need in navigating cannabis therapies.
Right. And so how do patients typically get connected with you?
Yeah. So when patients find me, they're typically getting connected with me on social media because I put a lot of educational content, and then they're like, wait, I want to know more. Cannabis can help with this. Tell me more. How can it help? And then I'll be like, well, this is how it works in the body, and this is what you should look for. And this is how you should try dosing. Of course, we're not physicians. We're not giving prescriptions. We're not giving orders. We are educating them on how to self-medicate.
Right. No, and that education piece in that guiding hand is so important, right? I mean, I can speak from experience. My mom is actually having issues with back pain recently. She's doing physical therapy and things like that. Nothing really seems to be working. And I was like, maybe you should give cannabis a try. And then she's, of course, the question is, all right, well, what do I try? And I'm like, well, there are a lot of options. And again, I'm probably more educated than most people, but again, I'm not a practitioner. So having someone like a nurse who can sort of help navigate would be very helpful.
Right, right. And that's exactly what we do, is we're looking at the whole patient and like their whole endocannabinoid system, or ECS, and we're looking at how we can optimize it with cannabis, with CBD and other cannabinoids, as well as other interventions. So that's kind of what sets us apart from budtenders, is who can make the cannabis recommendations, but we're also looking at their entire ECS and their whole system and their medications, and how can we help you optimize all of those things in addition to trying cannabis.
And now, are more and more nurses sort of getting interested in learning more about cannabis medicine?
Yeah, definitely. I think that nurses are, first of all, burnt out from working the bedside. I was one of those nurses that definitely got burnt out. And then they're seeing that, interventions at the bedside for chronic illness just aren't doing it. Patients are just being put on more and more medications and they're not working. The patients are still suffering. But what are things that we can try that may have better outcomes with fewer side effects? And that's where plant medicine can play a really pivotal role.
Excellent. And now, I know just this last fall, the ANA officially recognized cannabis nursing as a specialty. So how important was that?
I think that this is, I don't think we have yet come to terms with the gravity of that, because what that means, this is the first, healthcare organization association that has recognized, cannabis as the medicine that it is. So that means that we get to start treating cannabis as the real medicine that it is. The medical, the physicians organizations, the pharmacist organizations, they haven't come out and named their own specialties yet in cannabis, and nursing is the first one to do that. So that means that we're well on our way to treating and recognizing cannabis as a true therapeutic.
So, and I'm sure there has to be a little bit of pride there that your profession was the first to recognize that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really exciting. And, nursing is going on 20, I think it's 20 plus years of being the most trusted profession in the country. So the fact that cannabis nurses are being officially recognized is really huge. And I think that means that more people who are scared to try cannabis are going to find that hand to hold them in a nurse and guide them.
Right. Because trust really is important with cannabis medicine, because it's a bit of a journey, and there's trial and error, and there's some experimentation that goes on. So that trust is really important.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Talk a little bit about the panel that's going to be happening at CanMed. Who's on it, and what can we expect?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited for this panel. In past events that I've gone to at CanMed, you know, there was always this talk, like, how do we get this? How do we bring this mainstream? How do we get this information to the people in a trusted way? And as nurses, we're sitting in the audience saying, it's right here, it's your cannabis nurses. So that's when I wanted to, like, let's elevate cannabis nurses and talk about the amazing work that we're doing in the space, all across the space, and bring that to the front to see the important role that we play. So there's going to be five of us on the panel. Eloise Thiessen, who's, you know, she's doing also the medical practicum. She's going to be moderating it. I'm kind of spearheading it. So there are five of us who we play very diverse roles in the cannabis space. So we're going to be talking about the different things that we have done and the benefit that we have and the benefit we can provide. And I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, we're excited about it too. All right, so shifting gears a little bit here to talk about the poster that you're going to be presenting. That's about using psilocybin to treat cannabis dependency. So talk with me a bit about sort of the genesis of this. How did you first get interested in studying this?
Yeah, so the poster we're doing is from a project that we did in the fall. We wanted to see if microdosing psilocybin can help people who struggle with cannabis dependency. And I know people in the industry are like saying that cannabis does not have any problems, you know, it's 100% safe. But on our side, in helping our patients, we come across a lot of people who have an unhealthy relationship with the plant. And we started offering microdosing as part of our business back in May. And in doing that, we had patients report that they were like inadvertently decreasing their cannabis use alongside alcohol. We see that oftentimes, and that's well researched too. But the decrease in cannabis is not well researched. So we're like, could microdosing help people improve their relationship with the plant and depend on it less, the same way that we see other, you know, other substance addictions? So we kind of put it out there, like, let's get a group of eight people and let's try this out. So that's what we did. We found eight people who were willing to try this group program that we had put together. And it was a six-week program where we use microdosing group support. We met every week. We took a group tolerance break together. We provided a ton of education. We even did a mini dose session where people could consume up to 2 grams of psilocybin during that session. And then we had a group chat as well during that time. And the results were astounding. It was amazing to see.
So you were already using psilocybin microdosing to treat different conditions and sort of just saw the reduction in cannabis as a welcome side effect?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we were seeing, like, being reported. And then alongside of that, we have people coming to us saying, like, I'm using all this cannabis. How can I cut down? So we just wanted to see if this could be an effective tool. Of course, not a cure or anything like that, but a tool for people to use.
Right. And now, when you say an unhealthy relationship with cannabis, what does that look like?
In the people who were in the group, it looked like they could not get through the day without, you know, without sucking on their vape pen multiple times a day. It looked like people could not travel because they feared that they wouldn't have access to their cannabis. It looked like the slightest inconvenience would make them turn to their vape pen. And it was people who were just not, they wanted a different relationship. They didn't want to have to depend on it so much to help them feel normal. And then so there was one person who was showing early signs of CHS.
Oh, really?
She had like early morning nausea.
No, CHS, interesting topic. We actually just spoke with Ethan Russo, who did a study on CHS all about that. So That just seems awful.
Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of that now. I'm working with some other professionals in the space, and we're doing our own survey also.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what methods of support were available for cannabis overconsumption or cannabis dependency, kind of before you explored this? And how does that differ from, or how does that compare to, you know, alcohol or tobacco sort of well understood dependencies?
There does exist, like, you know, marijuana anonymous groups. I haven't like been to those, so I don't know a whole lot about them. I assume that they follow like the same 12-step program, maybe, that Alcoholics Anonymous does. There are some Facebook groups, but a lot of times it's like a silent, people suffer in silence a lot, and they're afraid to admit that their cannabis use is problematic because they have all these people saying cannabis is this amazing, wonderful medicine and wonderful drug. And like, shame on you for having a problem with it. It's not addictive, which is all completely wrong. So then they're just kind of like suffering in the shadows. So there's not a whole lot of support out there.
Yeah. No. And, you know, it's an important point that you can have an unhealthy relationship with just about anything, right? Even things that are good for you, like exercise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
So what is it about psilocybin that makes it helpful for addressing issues like this?
Yeah. So what we have found and what the research supports with psilocybin is that it can, one, like quiet the brain chatter, you know, the stories that we're telling ourselves, like, I can't be in the room with this person because they're going to say this. And it just kind of like quiets that down. So people aren't feeling the need to escape certain situations because that brain chatter has quieted down. And it can widen the window of tolerance for people and their anxiety. So things that used to make them anxious and turn to their vape pen no longer has that effect, or has less of that effect. You know, one example could be people who have road rage, and, you know, the smallest thing on the road could set them off, but microdosing can kind of help, like, oh, this person cut me off, but it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm just going to continue on my way. It helps things like roll off people's shoulders more, so they're not turning to cannabis to numb out from that.
Right. So I guess that's an important thing. So it sounds like it's more of a psychological dependency than a physical dependency on cannabis. Fair to say?
Fair, but also because, you know, the ECS and the way that our receptors work, if the receptors are used to getting all of this THC, then you pull away the THC. Of course, there are withdrawal symptoms that come with it.
Sorry, my light's turned off right there.
there are withdrawal symptoms, and then we kind of like help people like manage those things. Microdosing can be a great tool for that. Magnesium glycinate can be a great thing to help calm the nerves and the irritability that people feel from the withdrawal. So it is both. I think it's highly psychological, but it is also a little bit physical.
Yeah. So is irritability sort of the main side effect there from withdrawals?
Yeah. And that's what I just did a recent poll on my Instagram to see what withdrawal symptoms people are feeling. And I think it was like 80%, and it was just 100 people, but 80 of them said that irritability and anxiety were a major withdrawal symptom. So helping people to manage that in different ways, teaching them how the ECS works and how maybe like getting out and doing some exercise or doing a pleasurable activity can help them get into balance so they don't have to use their vape pen.
Excellent. Now, I know, Megan, you had shared a number of slides with different graphs that were kind of showing the results of this this trial. So I'd like to walk through those, and I can, you know, as we're talking about it, I'll kind of use some magic of editing to superimpose them here so the folks who are watching on YouTube can see that. So I don't know if you want to pull it up and where the best place to start would be.
We could start with the let's see here. Slide number 9 is the CUDIT score.
Right.
So the CUDIT is the Cannabis Use Disorder Identification Tool. So, you know, in the DSM Cannabis Use Disorder, we have really crappy diagnostics for that. You know, people who use more than 4 times a week, they have to check the box. But we know that not everybody who uses 4 times a week or more has cannabis use disorder. But we wanted a validated study tool to just measure it. So what we're looking at on this graph, the yellow is like the scores pre the program, and then the pink were the scores post the program. So the average score went from 30.25 down to 20.88. So that basically just means that like their use from the beginning of the program to the end of the program was cut from that cannabis use disorder tool. And I'd like to start by saying, like, back up and say, like, this is not an IRB approved study or anything like that. This was just a program that we did and we collected data.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, am I reading this right? Where one of them had actually went up?
That one did. And I think that one was an outlier that, like, because of the scoring itself, that maybe it didn't actually reflect what was going on with that group member, because everybody's use went down. But the way that the scoring is on those questionnaires doesn't reflect real right. world.
Yeah, like you said, a little problematic if just 4 times a week is
right.
A problem.
Right. Yes.
Okay, excellent. And no, and maybe to step back here a little bit too. So I know you kind of briefly touched on it, but so explain a bit what the weekly sessions are like. Now, are these sort of like, are people microdosing and then you're talking them through that? Or is it more that they're microdosing privately and then kind of reporting their experience? What does that look like?
Yeah, great question. So how it worked was, you know, we held like our group meetings. On week 1, everybody met together. We kind of went through like the different protocols that they can kind of choose from. So it is very much a choose your own adventure. We are not prescribing or telling them exactly what to take and how much. But we're saying you may want to start at a low dose, just like with cannabis, and then see how you feel with that. See if you need a little bit larger dose or smaller dose. And then just kind of go according to how you feel and how it makes you feel. And then on week 2, everybody started the tolerance break together. So everybody stopped their use Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We met all 3 of those days. And during the meetings, people were sharing, you know, how they felt. They were sharing their struggles. So it was very much a shared experience. And we had a group chat this whole time as well, that people could share their experiences, which was a phenomenal support system for them. And then the rest of the weeks, we met once each week. And we had the group chat going throughout. And then people also like shared, we provided education on like other cannabinoids. So many people don't know the benefits of the other cannabinoids that they can use to manage their symptoms that don't involve THC. So we provide that education, and then we met on a weekly basis and people just basically shared their experience.
And so that tolerance break, that week 2 tolerance break, that's from cannabis, correct? That's kind of taking a week long break from cannabis. So I can imagine for a lot of these patients, like, how long had it been since they had taken that much time off from using cannabis?
Some of them have never taken time off. And some of them have tried in the past and they couldn't get through it by themselves. So like the group support and group accountability really played a key role.
Yeah. And how did it affect their sensitivity once they kind of returned to it the week after that?
So they could return if they wanted. Some people didn't want to return at all. They just wanted to quit for good. But some of them that did return were like, wow, I smoked before I went to the grocery store and I actually felt high. It has been months or years since I actually felt high. Oh, wow. So they're like, that was really pivotal for them also to be able to feel that, because so many people use and they don't feel high anymore.
Wow. Yeah. No, and I know that's one thing that Dr. Sulak talks about a lot with his patients, is trying to schedule in regular tolerance breaks for that reason, that it can kind of reset your receptors and kind of increase your sensitivity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially with cannabis, prices being what they are, being able to use less to get the desired effect is always a good thing.
Right, right. And the THC potency, you know, our endocannabinoid system, I believe, was not meant to be blasted with 90% distillate multiple times a day. Mm. I think that that's a somewhat unnatural way to consume. So, and that's what's making people sick in the long run a lot of times. So,
right. All right. Should we look at another graph?
Yeah. So then next up on page 10 here is our measured general anxiety disorder scale. This is also a validated tool. So the yellow is each member before the group, and then the pink was at the end of the group. Oh, wow. So the mean score went from 11.9 down to 5.9. So everybody's anxiety decreased as their cannabis use decreased. And we do see, you know, people who consume high amounts of THC on a regular basis oftentimes have anxiety. Mm.
I believe it.
And it's like a chicken or the egg thing, but sometimes they come together.
Excellent. Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. And then the most important thing, you know, cannabis use is really hard. I'm looking at graph 12 here. Cannabis use is hard to quantify because everybody's use patterns are so different. So what we did with graph on page 12 here was we just asked people what their use patterns were before and at the end of the group. And I think this is the most important one because you can really see how people changed. You know, they went from 4 to 6 joints a day down to 1 to 2. So that was like cut by 30%. 6 to 8 dabs plus flower throughout the day to only flower at night. Number 3 was the one who, that one had early signs of CHS, you know, 50 to 70 milligrams a day in concentrates, edibles. I think she was also using FICO or RSO, and then down to just, you know, a couple of inhalations a day. And then people were using high doses of edibles also. And then they went down to just a couple of milligrams. So this is my favorite one because you can actually see the human element and how each person's use patterns changed.
Right. No, and I think that, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, cold turkey is not always the best way to go about stopping a bad habit. So seeing a reduction and then, you know, continuing that until eventually you get to zero is probably a more sustainable way to.
Right. Yeah. And our goal wasn't to get people to like quit altogether. You know, the goal was to help them reframe their relationship and bring awareness to their use. Cause a lot of people just use and don't even think about it. They don't know their why. So just bringing awareness that, okay, you're using this valid medicine. Why are you using it? What is it doing for you? Can we use a lower dose or other cannabinoids to achieve that same effect?
Yeah. And that's a great point. I mean, cause we know that cannabis is beneficial, so we do want them to continue using it and just make sure that it's in a beneficial way. Right.
Yeah. Yep. For whatever that looks like for that person, because of course. Everybody's different.
Of course. And so I'm curious, so the microdosing of psilocybin, is that something that would be expected to be done sort of in perpetuity, or is it just to kind of get a reset and then can go from there? Like, how does that work?
So the microdosing was to help people. How do I explain this? It was used to help decrease anxiety, to help bring awareness to people's thought patterns and the reasons why they were using cannabis in the first place. Mm. A lot of people, I think like maybe 6 or 7 out of 8 of them were using cannabis to manage symptoms of previous trauma or high stress situations, right? And we see that in addiction. Addiction is not about the substance itself. It's about usually the trauma that people are running from. Hmm. So this was to help bring awareness to that and help people realize that they can actually get through whatever situation it is without having to turn to THC to help them get through that situation.
Right. So this isn't a situation of just kind of trading one substance for another, right? It's
right. Yeah. This is like a tool that people can use to bring awareness to their thought patterns and their use patterns and maybe shift things. You know, psilocybin increases neuroplasticity in the brain. So if you have this track in your brain that says, okay, when I go into this staff meeting, it's going to be high stress. So I need to use my vape before I go into the staff meeting. But psilocybin can be like, maybe it won't be that high stress. I'm feeling calm now. Maybe I don't need it. So then they don't use it and go into that staff meeting and things turn out fine. And then that kind of like solidifies into this, you know, the neuroplasticity helps solidify that path in the brain. So then they don't need it to go into future meetings.
Yeah. No, and it's really something that's incredible about psilocybin. I hear about these other studies too with, you know, PTSD and things like that. You know, having one or two of those guided sessions can sort of really help people. And again, it's not something that like, oh, I need to take this every day. It's more of like, you know, you have that realization, it creates a new pathway. And I'm not saying you're cured, but it seems that way.
Right. And it's, yeah, we don't say cure. We say it's like an effective tool to help.
Great. I like that. All right, yeah. Cool. More graphs, please.
Okay. What else do we have? We have, this was a paid program. People paid $399 to be part of this program. They definitely got more value than just $400. I forgot to say that we sent them, magnesium glycinate. We sent them an all natural sleep supplement, and we sent them some of our CBG, CBGA formulation because of how CBG works in the body. So that was included in this. And everybody says, oh, I don't want to pay money to help me take a tea break. But this is how the program kind of paid for itself for some people. I'm looking at slide number 13, and this is how, you know, the amount that people spent prior to the program and then at the end of the program. So the average monthly spend was $321 at the beginning, and then at the end of the program, it dropped down to $122. So a lot of people are spending hundreds of dollars a month on their weed. And then by the end of the program, you know, they realize that they didn't use it that much. So of course, they're not going to spend that much on it.
Yeah, no. And it goes back to the point we said before, you know, cannabis is expensive, especially when compared to alcohol and some of these other substances that have been around for a long time. So being able to reduce that helps the pocketbook too.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that we thought was important to measure in, you know, how much people are spending.
Excellent. So where do you go from here? Is this something, a program that you're hoping to start offering more widely?
Yeah, this is where it gets interesting. When we started the program, we made it very clear that we're not sure if this is going to work. We want to see if this will work. Okay, we're charging $400 for this program. We're looking for 8 people to try and test this out. And we were able to fill it with 8 people. I think we had a couple extra too that we had to turn away because we were full. And then we have the results, and then we're like promoting the results and showing all of the cool things this program did. And then we had a really hard time filling the next cohort. And we're not sure if it was a timing thing. We originally had it starting in January. But we're like, okay, people aren't spending money on themselves in December. So let's push it to February. And then we promoted it like as hard and as best as we could, like showing this awesome data, showing patient testimonials. But there was just not interest in it. And we're not sure if it was the cost of the program or what. But we know people struggle, and we have this awesome thing available. So that's where it got interesting, that once we were sure about the results, people weren't interested.
That is, well, that's unfortunate.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is. Well, hopefully we'll put a link in the show description here, hopefully, so that if anyone listening or watching is interested, they can get in touch with you. But
yeah, Of course. And so now we offer, like, groups are hard to fill and hard to manage. You know, because it's a group, you're trying to get all these people on the same page and in the same meeting, the same time zone. That could also be a, you know, a factor. So we do offer one-on-one support now for people. Like, we're offering the same program, but in a one-on-one format.
Excellent. Well, maybe it's just that so few people have an unhealthy relationship with cannabis. No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe.
All right. Excellent. Well, Megan, winding down here, hoping that you might be able to share any additional resources that you think would be good for people who are interested in learning more. Where can they go to learn more about the work you're doing, or maybe just similar studies that kind of touch on these topics?
Right. So our website is trustedcannanurse.com. If people are interested in working one-on-one with us, then, you know, they can reach out. There are links on the website for, you know, on the microdosing page to book a discovery call. And I'll make a plug for CanMed too. I am so excited. This will be my third year at CanMed, and it was the first cannabis conference that I went to 2 years ago in Pasadena. I think I like booked it like the week before or something. It was like a last minute thing, cause I just live half an hour away. And, that was the best decision I made, and the amount that I learned and the connections that I made at that conference, and then going to Florida last year, was amazing. The food was amazing. And then, like, because it's a smaller conference, it's easier and more, a more intimate space to really get to know people and, you know, talk to the Bonnie Goldsteins and the Dustin Sulaks and eat dinner across from Ethan Russo and have like real conversations with these game changers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad you said that too, because that's something that we're even trying to do more of this year, is kind of providing more of those opportunities for the attendees to sort of talk outside of the lecture hall and, you know, have those conversations and make those connections, because, you know, that's where all the real value is, right? That's where kind of the lasting effects really happen.
Right. I'm looking forward to the beach volleyball myself, the food, but yes, the people too.
Excellent. And I'm sure there'll be a number of people there who are excited to meet you.
Yeah. I'm excited to go.
All right, Megan. Well, thanks again for doing this. I look forward to seeing you down in Florida.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Megan Bang. Check out the links in the show description to learn more about the topics we discussed. And thanks again to this episode's sponsor, Trusted Canna Nurse. Our next episode drops April 17th. That's 2 weeks from today. In the meantime, go to canmedevents.com to check out all the details related to CanMed 24. Speakers, poster presenters, networking events, panels, workshops, meals, and more. All the information is there. While you're at canmedevents.com, sign up for email alerts so you don't miss any announcements before the event. If you are planning to join us in Florida this May, register for your ticket package now. Space is limited and tickets are going fast. I also invite you to follow us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Just search for CanMed Events. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. All right, that's it from us. Stay safe, stay healthy, and be sure to join us for the next CanMed Coffee Talk.